Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Josh Ron, we've had a hell of a weekend of video games. Now, I can't tell you what I've been playing. You know, I can tell you that I've acquired God of War Ragnarok. I can't tell you another thing about it, though.
Dude, oh, here's the thing, right? There are so many video games I've actually had to put playing God of War Ragnarok off myself. The second code first came through.
0.1% problems.
I know, right? And I'm going to get to it, but I needed to complete Gotham Knights before I went to God of War Ragnarok, because I need God of War Ragnarok to be the only thing on my plate. I can't be spinning Batman on one hand, then Kratos and Atreus on the other.
It's very true. Gotham Knights will now also be referred to through gritted teeth as fallen off. We did initial impressions. We did a video on it a good few last week, I think. It feels like forever ago now. Been in a God of War cocoon, I have. But like in terms of God of War, sorry, we'll get to Gotham Knights stuff. I want to break those things down. But first, you want to do a little bit of a shout out, because we had a lovely tribute thing put together.
Yeah, because in between playing video games all week, I have been laughing nonstop at a bingo card that one of the listeners called TJ tweeted at us, and you can find this on Scott Tilford's Twitter. He retweeted it, and I just want to shout it out because it's very funny, because you know, this essentially is pointing out every single thing that we do in every single one of these podcasts in a really funny way. And I felt more seen reading this than I ever have before, because it's absolutely bang on. And now it makes me kind of, you know, we'll no doubt say some of these bingo phrases today, but now it's made me very aware of how I speak on these podcasts and the things that we rely on.
It was very much, realizing in the UBP that I say next question every
that
now and
hilarious.
Then. Or applying, whatever the thing is. Right now, you'll be a Gotham Knightsman, and you've got to get through that. Little things that you don't realize. But yeah, massive shout out to TJ. Would recommend go and check out that bingo card. I kind of want to play What Culture Podcast Bingo. I don't know how yet, but maybe we'll do that as some sort of Christmas treat.
I think is that maybe if we ever get like the big streams back, right, we should get a snippet of podcasts, and we should play it as a drinking game. Ooh. Every single time one of the bingo phrases or events comes up, we all have to take a drink, because I think we'll be hammered after about 10 minutes.
I'm a big fan of that. But yeah, in terms of video games, I should also say that Mondays bring you the wind-up. I'm Scott Tilford. You're Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford.
Brian, going over the latest video games, the latest talking points, the latest news in the industry. But right now, like I said, can't talk about God of War, and in terms of gaming industry stuff, there's not that much doing the rounds in terms of wider industry conversations other than what the hell's going on with the next generation and frame rates and ting, which brings us back to Gotham Knights. And that game, I said that I love Gotham Knights, which right now I still do. I'm about 5-6 hours in. I got sidelined by God of War in a very pleasant way. But Gotham Knights, I think, has some incredible character writing and a very promising story. And initially, a very engaging mystery, but you've now finished it. And apparently the back third, you text me and says, one of the worst back thirds you've ever seen.
I have, you know, never...
We're not going to do spoilers either.
No spoilers. Just talking general gameplay and mission design things. I was so disappointed with the back third of this game, because... You know, as you said, we did that review in progress last week. We did our first impressions after a couple of hours. And while we were negative on a lot of things, there was a lot of promise to the game. And I did get into a groove with it after about 10 hours, where I was just... actually quite enjoying
Final Fantasy 13, is it?
100%. You know, there were a lot of interesting side missions popping off. The world felt more populated. And I was having a really fun time with the gear system in flicking between characters. But man, this thing feels unfinished when you get to the back third. All of that promise, for me, completely drops off. And I wonder whether people will echo this sentiment when they get to the end of the game, because it just nosedives in terms of the variety of the mission design, the quality of the side admissions themselves and the eventual mystery of what's going on in Gotham, to me, amounted to pretty much nothing towards the end. And it was so disappointing, man, because we wanted to love it. We really did. There's so much promise, so much ambition in there, but it tails off hard.
But you also said that there's one boss fight they reuse. You fight the same thing five times?
Yeah, well, this is it. Let me kind of try to explain what I mean about it feeling unfinished. And that's because the quality of the mission design and the repetition of the game design towards the end is just so bland. There are some really interesting set pieces at the midpoint of this game, especially when you're doing the side missions for the other villains. You know, the entire environment transforms to reflect the characteristics of the villains that you're fighting. And it feels big. It feels like a big set piece. It's visually spectacular. It's the closest to next gen that the game ever gets. However, the quality, or at least the creativity of those missions, is not present towards the end of the game.
Right.
One of the final things you do in this title is fight a boss, which is quite cool the first time you do it. It's in a really interesting location. It's a unique boss fight for the time.
Uh-huh.
You fight this boss, you think that's cool, and then before you can progress to the final mission, the game says, oh, by the way, there are three of these bosses out in the open world. Go take them out. And it's the same boss every time with no variations in the moveset. One might be harder than the other. So you do this three times, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you finally get into the final level. And in the final level, you fight the boss again. It throws you at one more time. And I was just thinking, how have you ran out of ideas? How is this what we're doing for the final level of this climactic experience when you were doing more creative things 10 hours ago? Like, did you just run out of time? Is the question that I have to ask.
That's the thing, though. I have such a feeling with this game that we're awaiting a Bloomberg-style report, an insider report of what the hell happened during development, because their whole thing about... I mentioned this in the video we did. I mentioned this on the last podcast we did. Their whole thing of ditching the last generation's consoles like 2 months before launch meant nothing. Like, it's more like a marketing push. But like even then, it's a terrible one, because if their idea was one of the first proper next-gen games, like built for the new systems, whatever, they still couldn't really say that because they knew they were going to hit 30 FPS. And even that whole side of it is kind of fascinating in itself, because obviously initially it was strung between four different platforms, at the very little kind of thing, PS5, series systems, and assuming to the Xbox One or whatever, then they ditched the last generation to try and focus on the new systems, but they still barely hit 30 FPS. So it's like whatever that core executable is, whatever that core file is that is the video game, is still struggling to be optimized for something, and that's what we've ended up getting, is a very unoptimized game.
Yeah.
But that general feeling of what the hell are we putting together, what are we aiming for, seems to extend into, like you said, the way that the campaign rolls out, where the opening is incredibly strong. Right now, like I said, I'm 5-6 hours in. I love what they're going for and what they've given me so far. I personally prefer to Arkham Knight, just in terms of character writing, the mystery. I care more about it. I care more about the way that, thematically, the way that it's set up, this idea of trying to live up to Batman and the idea of how do you tackle post-Batman Gotham and all the different things that come from that, the various factions that are trying to take hold of Gotham and how do you combat that, and everyone's trying to live up to their own proteges, like whether that's Barbara Gordon for Jim Gordon or whatever. And I love all those things. For me, that's way more engaging than the weird bait and switch they did with Arkham Knight, where it was just the Arkham Knight is Jason Todd. Who's it going to be? Oh, well, the first thing he says lets you know it's Jason Todd.
Right.
And like the weird line delivery that I thought everyone had in Arkham Knight. As much as I love Jonathan Banks, his Jim Gordon was a weird fit. And just things like that. Arkham Knight was a weird, weird game. And then they tried to put Joker in there and it just felt really messy and whatever. I thought Gotham Knight from the first 5 to 6 hours landed so much strongly, which, to bring it back to my dev point, is that those things, it's not that you make a game in order, but I feel like in terms of at some point you're going to polish the first impression, you're going to polish the first half, but it's one of those things where like you realize as development rolls on that you don't have a finale, you aren't able to sketch out or conceptualize and put together whatever they would have had in mind. So it becomes, let's reuse this boss over and over again to try and pad it out a little bit and create a sense of a finality. But that reminds me of Metal Hellsinger, where every single level was the same thing again for whatever reason on the dev side. But like I said, I feel like we're overdue, or we're due, some sort of conversation on what the hell happened with Gotham Knights.
And what the hell is going on with the Suicide Squad as well? I mean, you know, Rocksteady hasn't had a game released in 7 years now, if we're talking about Arkham Knight. You know, knocked that Arkham trilogy out incredibly quick for how big and detailed those games were. Yeah. Then they've been quiet, and there have been a lot of reports.
They had three games in 6 years.
Yeah, man.
2009, 2011, and 2015.
Exactly. They were on a run, and now they've had, it's taken them longer between Arkham Knight and Suicide Squad than it did for the entirety of that trilogy, which is just kind of crazy.
Can I make a horrible prediction?
Yeah,
that game is not going to sell.
Not going to. I think it'll sell, but whether it's going to be good is going to be different. I think.
I think the other way around. I think the Rocksteady's like are a very proficient dev. It depends how much Warner Brothers have got their tendrils in and had a bunch of business meetings where they've said, "Well, you've had a lot of time in development. We need X monetization model plugged into this thing." But the Rocksteadiness should be solid. Like most of that dev team are still the same as they were for the original Arkham trilogy, or whatever. I just don't think the average person cares about Suicide Squad, and I think that the most recent movie, absolutely bombing, only cemented that fact.
But do you not think, just not to dwell on this too much, do you not think the idea of it being Suicide Squad and the Justice League will be enough? Because people might not care about Suicide Squad, but I do think the idea of going up against, a warped version of the Justice League with Superman, Green Lantern, I think, and all of the others in there, is not give it an extra kind
It doesn't
of pull.
Do it for me. I'm curious how much people will care about the DC films. I think, like, obviously Black Adam's out right now. I'm seeing very little conversation on that. I've seen, like, enough people. I saw Greg Miller from Kinda Funny share a midnight screening photo where he was the only person in the cinema, and I'm curious what that is. I know it's done, like, decent enough in terms of its opening weekend and everything, but I just wonder where people are at on DC stuff and that idea of missing its window, let's say, so drastically, where, like, there was that first Suicide Squad movie was abysmal, but there was more positivity around that than the Suicide Squad, the James Gunn one, even though that was a better film. Yeah. And I feel like the Suicide Squad game will be like that James Gunn movie. A lot of people like it if they see it, but the general reception will be Suicide Squad again. This never worked, and you've, like, the whole, like, Warner Brothers thing where there was the Damian Wayne game that got canned, or assumedly got canned. There was all the rumors around Arkham Insurgency, all these different ideas that could have been the future of the Arkham series, and they sort of just dovetailed off into the Suicide Squad game. I just don't think the love is there for Suicide Squad. I feel like that was Warner Brothers chasing Guardians of the Galaxy in terms of putting money behind this set of characters, and it never worked.
For me, I don't think that matters as much in the gaming realm because, if we were talking about sheer popularity getting, bums in seats, as it were, controllers in hands, I think, that was, for me, disproven with the Avengers. Like, the Avengers, even at the time, was, like, the biggest property in the world. And because that game wasn't very good, it didn't sell. Like, it could have traded... on its IP alone, and it didn't. Same with kind of Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, that franchise is huge in the movie universe, and the game was pretty good.
Yeah.
But that kind of came and went, and the sort of pedigree of its IP didn't help it. I think Suicide Squad might benefit from the inverse in that its IP isn't as popular as Guardians and isn't as popular as the Avengers. But if the game is good, I don't think that'll matter. I think people will go to it because it's a cool game, it's a good game with superheroes in, and look, Superman's there.
It didn't work for Guardians of the Galaxy, game, whereas like that was like incredibly proficient, but like that the thing that I think puts people off, this is such a dovetail, but I feel like the thing that puts people off is when you don't have likenesses intact. Like when the Avengers game got shown off, I remember that general sort of like deflation online of people going like, oh, so it's not Chris Evans, it's not Robert Downey Jr., it's not whatever, and it was like, who the hell are these guys? And it was like, and then sort of Square Enix and Crystal Dynamics having to pull it back and be like, well, it's our take on the characters and whatever. And like, I still love that game's campaign, well, I love that game's version of Sandra Saad, and I like her story, the rest of the campaigns kind of falls apart or whatever. But that whole thing of, Suicide Squad, it's like, well, you can't get Margot Robbie, but it's still Harley Quinn. It's still recognizably Harley Quinn. And then the other characters, like, you've got King Shark. You don't have to worry. Like, that will look like King Shark. So it's like, you can kind of do those things. But I wonder how much that the optics of it factors in. Like, whether people go, like, how much are they trying to trade off the assumed likeness of Suicide Squad in a wider cultural, pop culture kind of capacity? For me, I just feel like it's missed its window. And then if I talk about the literal gameplay side of it, which is kind of what Gotham Knights appeared to be doing. I know this is a two-player co-op game, but it always came across like a four-person game, which I think is like Marmite to some people. Mostly like me, like I didn't care about Gotham Knights until we got the review code through, and I was like, I might as well try it. You were doing the review, I might as well try it. And then I found that I really liked it. I think when something advertises itself as a four-person squad shooter, to some people, that is just the anti-game. That's just not what they want to touch whatsoever, which I'm one of those people. Especially when you start telling me it works as a single player. That'll get me to try it, but then as soon as my character goes down and I can't be revived and I have to restart again, it's all that stuff. I think when you look at the Suicide Squad gameplay, it's another squad shooter made for a world where those are the biggest genre in gaming, and they're just not.
Yeah, I mean, you could be right, man. Like, I do agree that
Anthem, Avengers, Gotham Knight, they've all fell.
Yes, 100%. I think Gotham Knights is different in that it works better as a single player game, and I hope that Suicide Squad will, work if you're playing solo with your, computer teammates around you. I hope so anyway. I do want to go back to something that you said when you were talking about Gotham Knights and the quality of the writing, because I do kind of agree that the opening hours present a Batman story that is really interesting, with fascinating characters who were dealing with loss and who are dealing with trying to live up to their mentors. You know, you talk there about Barbara Gordon wanting to live up to Jim Gordon and the precedent that he set within the GCPD.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got Tim Drake as Robin, of course, being like the runt of the litter, trying to live up to pretty much everyone around him and trying to outdo the previous Robins. You got Jason Todd, who died and came back to life and is just essentially...
Does he ever talk about that? Because it's such a... It's so mentioned that he never brings it up.
He always talks about it, Scott Tilford. He never shuts up about
Jason
being
dead.
And this is what I'm going to get to, right? All of these characters have great... motivations. They have interesting kind of characteristics and driving forces behind them. Mm-hmm. However, for me, the writing never evolves on those ideas. I couldn't believe how many jokes about being dead that Jason Todd makes in this game. And actually, they're not even jokes. They're just comments.
I was going to say, okay, yeah, do your thing.
No, people will just say, you know, hey, that's a strange, oh, what about that Lazarus pit, eh?
Right.
And Jason Todd will be like, I know something about a Lazarus pit because I died and then it brought me back to life. But it's not a joke. It's not evolving the character. And I kind of laughed that right at the very end of the game.
Mm.
He says it again. He's like, hey, you know, I was dead, right? And it would have been fine if everyone else kind of was like, oh, you're talking about this again. But
right.
It's just kind of like played as it always was throughout the game. And it's the same with Barbara. You know, she talks about kind of like missing some time as Batgirl when she was Oracle. She talks about, you know, again, Jim Gordon a lot. But the idea is just kind of like, oh, people will tell her that you're disappointing Bruce Wayne. You're disappointing Jim Gordon. You're disappointing the rest of your family. And it never really evolves beyond that. So to me, the character writing had potential. But ultimately, it kind of just boils down to them being defined by one thing and not really getting any evolution on that one thing, which is why ultimately I do prefer Arkham Knight's writing.
Yeah, what's hilarious is that to me, you've just described Batman.
Right.
Because I don't feel like, I mean, I couldn't tell you. He's been the dead parent hero for 75 years or whatever. Like, I don't think he's had any resolution. I don't think he's had any evolution from that. He's still, like, whatever age he's going to be, 40, 50 years old or whatever, in canon, still motivated by the death of his parents that happened when he was, like, 8 years old. Like, I think of those characters as all being in, like, a cocoon of their own motivations, and they almost intentionally don't evolve past that. It's like, that's why they're fighting. That's them.
I get that as a kind of like basis for a character. You know, Batman has his parents, and that's been, you know,
not anymore.
To death now. Not anymore.
Yep.
Spider-Man has Uncle Ben. Like, those are bedrocks of those characters. However, even within those stories, not everything refers back to that one moment. They're not talking about it all the time. They have other traumas. They have other issues that they're dealing with. You know, yeah, Batman is always going to be haunted by the death of his parents, but he's also got this relationship with Talia al Ghul. He's got this thing going on with Selina Kyle. He's got all of these rivalries with all of these different villains. He has other problems that they refer to. So he's like... At his core, defined by the death of his parents, but people aren't referring to it necessarily all the time.
No, that's true. They do a thing with Jason Todd, which I thought, and again, I can only refer to the first, literally, I wish I had my exact time. It's between 5 and 6 hours. They do the thing with Jason Todd where they have a scene where, I think it's if you're playing as him, he's cooking a meal for the rest of the Bat family, and Nightwing's talking to him about, they didn't ingratiate him more into the Bat family, and that's why he was more of a vigilante, and obviously it led to him dying. And Nightwing starts to talk about that, and then Todd kind of cuts him off and just sort of says, like, look, it's okay, like, we got through it, like, whatever. And I was like, that's, like, a nice way to address it. And then there was a bit later on where they make, like, a zombie joke.
Yeah.
And they do a thing where, like, we're used to being around the undead, right, Jason? And I'm just like, he's dealing with that.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was a way more serious thing. But then I was, in the moment, I was like, well, you guys are kind of all friends, and maybe that's how you would process it. But then they also do a scene where you can do a dancing mini game with Barbara. You don't push buttons for it, but you trigger a cutscene with the two of them. I say minigame, it's not, it's a cutaway, but the two of them are like settling scores on a dancing game, and that gets interrupted. It's like light spoilers for that one cutscene. It's not a wider thing. I don't know if it becomes a wider thing, because I don't know the rest of the story, but in that scene near the beginning, you're playing this dancing game, and all of a sudden he's overcome by something, and it's like this weird effect of the Lazarus pit. And so I was like, well, it is this like active thing that he's dealing with, like, in that timeline. I don't know if he just came back like a month before, so I was able to kind of just in the moment, and I guess that it probably just dovetails off as the story goes on, was kind of like, oh, this is your main issue, like, you are dealing with being back alive again. And that's like, that is like a thing to explore. And then like I thought they did quite nice stuff with Barbara just sort of saying, hey, I'm going to get some, like, you know, she tries to comfort him and she can't really get through to him. She said, I'll get some food. Like, do you want your usual? And he's just, oh, thanks. Thank you. And I was like, that's a nice back and forth, considering you're dealing with like a resurrected character. So I really like that stuff. But I guess it depends if it actually becomes anything. If it never does, then yeah.
That's it. You know, obviously, some of the character writing is stronger than the others. You know, Jason Todd, I didn't actually spend too much time with, so I won't comment necessarily on his arc through the game. I played more as Tim Drake and Barbara Gordon, so I've got a better understanding of how they develop and how their arcs are treated. So Jason Todd probably, you know, his motivation feels more directly tied to the story as well, because obviously Batman's dead, and they even ask at one point, you know, like, why don't we bring Bruce back with a Lazarus Pit? Obviously Jason Todd is like, that would be a proper bad move, my guy, because that did not work for me at all, and I'm still suffering from this, and it's in some ways maybe a fate worse than death. So he is kind of, it's interesting how he is more tied to the central narrative than maybe some of the other characters, and maybe that works more as an arc. I'm not entirely sure. I do want to talk about, if we move on from the writing for a second.
Yes.
You mentioned there about the issue with four-player games being that if you're playing single-player and you go down and no one's there to respawn you, is that a bad time? And the answer is yes. Unfortunately, Gotham Knights mostly avoids this, and you can play 90% of this game solo and have a good time and not feel entirely overwhelmed. However, for whatever reason, it craps the bed when you do the side missions and you get to the bosses in those side missions. There are three main villain threads throughout this game that aren't tied in to the main plot, and if you do those side missions, they're some of the most fun and visually spectacular in the whole game. However, they're all capped off by a boss fight that is clearly designed for more than one person.
Right.
And the issue is, even if you're over-leveled approaching them like I was, you're still going to have a bad time. They're just so poorly designed and designed specifically to frustrate you that they're some of the worst boss fights.
So do they want you to be in multiple places at once? Like, what is the thing that makes you feel like this is badly designed?
With the issue with most is just like how much health they tank.
Right.
They have an insane health pool that you're dwindling down. They all have attacks designed to frustrate and push you away, so you can't keep close to them for a long period of time because they may, you know, spawn spikes out of the ground, which means that every boss fight is like a battle of attrition where you can't even wail on them for too long. You can get one or two hits in, you've got to roll out the way, dodge a lot of attacks, go in, get a few hits in. They feel designed for one person to distract the boss and another to fight them,
like
and
a raid
stick up
boss
from behind, 100%, because their attacks go on for a long time, and you spend more time dodging than you do fighting, which would be fine if you didn't have to hit them so many times to win. Another issue is that they're all multi-phase boss fights, and those phases could be quite cool. So you've got a big health pool. When you knock a boss down a third, it'll kind of like transform, or it'll throw you a new scenario. Then you do another third, another scenario, and then you win. The issue is, you only have like 7 health packs max for each for the whole fight. So it means that if you get past the first phase with kind of like no health packs, you're probably not going to be able to beat the boss, so it's actually better to die at that point.
God.
Reload the checkpoint, because it checkpoints every single time you get to a different phase.
Okay.
Reload the checkpoint, get 3 health packs back, and then go again, because you know you're not going to have the kind of stamina or the prowess to kind of get that boss down, because they're just such slogs.
So it does checkpoint you per phase.
Per phase, yes.
That's a little bit of a godsend. Because I was like, if it's going to make me do multiple phases all on one checkpoint, I'll throw it out the window.
I wouldn't have finished it if you had to.
Right.
That would have been impossible. You know, I like to think I'm okay at video games, and I like to think I prepared
more than
for these boss fights by, you know, being over leveled to try and offset the fact that I was just one person going up against them. And it still was a tough time. It was still a slog. Like, 2 of them in particular, like some of my least favorite boss fights of the year, because they were just so frustrating, Scott Tilford, and I didn't enjoy it. And that's kind of what started to sour me on the game, because I just thought there were some areas of this title that aren't designed well, like that that feel rushed, that feel like a cool concept that has just been pushed out without proper balancing. And they stand out so much because the rest of the game is well balanced. I never had that issue at all in the main story, but there was nothing, at least that I found, that signposted these side missions and specifically these side bosses as necessitating 2 players rather than 1.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves,
feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
That's the whole thing, is like that trying to design those styles of fights. Like the worst part of my first few hours with the game, and I mentioned at the very end of the hands-on video that we did, was the fight against Blazer and Basher. It's like these two heavies that you fight after you. It's around the first Harley Quinn section, and it was like you've got two heavies coming at you with a handful of like regular goons, and there are like six or eight bombs to defuse around the outside of them. It's like immediately you won't be in three places at once.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh, that's like interesting, because there's like it's a multiple protagonist game where I could be playing this in co-op, and it's one of those things where. And I've started just despising this level, this type of game design, where the only thing that changes when they say difficulty, where it's a boss fight, is that it just does tons of damage. But the animations are the same. So it's like something that's attacking you with a really quick flurry, intended for chip damage, intended for, you know, when you're the same level as it or something, is now one-shotting you just because the numbers are higher. And it's like, I'm losing to a spreadsheet. I'm losing to a mathematical equation that I can't have any control over. And the only solution is, well, go get perfect dodges. But then it's like, well, they have unblockable attacks and they attack you off screen and there's no marker to tell you something's incoming, so you're going to die anyway. And it's, or maybe they have a ranged attack that is, it hits you at like, it's like the speed of a bullet because it's a regular ranged attack from them and it's not something you're meant to dodge anyway, which now just kills you in one hit. And I feel like trying to design those styles of boss encounters, they get mitigated by the amount of players there are, like a raid boss or whatever. But it comes back to that whole thing of like, oh, this works as a single player game, which it does to a point.
Yeah.
Every single one of these has said, it's workable as a single player game. And for me, the main reference point is The Division back in 2016. When that first got shown off, everyone thought it was a single-player game. Then it was revealed to be more of a multiplayer game with, like, the PvP in the middle of the map and everything. And Ubisoft were like, don't worry, it's a single-player game. You can absolutely play it single-player. And I played through The Division single-player, but every time I died, good band, my guy just went down to his knees, and there was just a countdown on the screen. And I was like, well, what do you want me to do? I can't, yeah. I literally can't. All you're doing is reminding me that no one's here to revive me. And I don't know if you have that same feeling, where, like, that sort of that general mentality of I'm playing it wrong. Like, it's like, just mandate it to be co-op. Yeah. or mandate it to be single player. Like, pick one.
Had the same thing during these bosses, which just added the insult to injury, where you literally go down and it's like respawning 4, 3, 2, 1. And again, it just made me realize that this particular part wasn't designed necessarily for one person, or it was, you know, you could play it solo if that's always the option, but you're not going to have a fun time and it's not the optimum way to play it.
No, I want to shout out as well, just because I think it's a fast, like, we talk loads about this is the DMC2 of certain franchises, or the DMC2 approach, which is something that is quote unquote ambitious or quote unquote a risk, creative risk, and it fumbles it or it gets something wrong, but it's still interesting to talk about. Like, it's still interesting to talk about, you know, what went right, what went wrong, and whatever. And sometimes those games can be fascinating to pick apart. This is such a weird game. Like, it's trying for like 4 or 5 different game design ethoses, where you kind of have some live service elements in terms of just the way you're acquiring so much loot and the progression loop that you're on. The mission design is very like defend this point, attack this point. Now there's 3 bombs in the city, go defuse them or whatever. But then you also have really good cutscene direction, really good character writing, at least at the beginning, to try and instill this idea that it's an Arkham follow-up. And you can get through the stealth parts of it like Arkham. You can almost play it exactly like Arkham in that regard. You know, jump on top of the gargoyles, make a distraction, take some dudes out stealthily or whatever. Like, and then you've got all the UI stuff, which I saw Forbes do a headline saying it has the worst UI either of all time or of the year or something. And I was like, I don't hate it. I am allowed to talk about this. I don't love God of War Ragnarok's AI from my first impressions in the only part that I've played. That's a whole thing about like you know, trying to get like a smooth UI that feels intuitive and it feels like it serves you up the things that you want. I got so lost in Gotham Knights UI when I first started, where it was telling me about being able to transmogrify costumes and using mod chips and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, that's another live service component that doesn't really belong here. And it's like a weird distraction. But I do still find myself kind of just fascinated by what the hell were their design meetings? How many iterations did this go through? And how did the team that made Arkham Origins make this?
Yeah, man.
Like 9 years later.
I have no idea. And again, I'm going to be fascinated like you are to see how they got to this point, because they had a bunch of projects canceled. You know, we've talked so many times before about them. They were originally on Suicide Squad and then that was cancelled, and then they were apparently going to make a Damian Wayne Batman game, which I would have loved to have seen, and that was canned too. And then we ended up with Gotham Knights, which has some interesting ideas, but I do think that, you know, to compare it to the Arkham games and specifically Arkham Origins that WB Montreal made, I know people will say it's not fair to compare to that series because this is more of an RPG.
I think they're trading on it for the marketing, so whatever.
100%. But I would say to that, like, why would you make a worse game then? Why would you make an RPG if the combat, if you knew the combat would be worse, if you knew the open world would be worse, if you knew the progression would be worse? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you can say that they're not the same, so why are you comparing them? But I think I can compare them if you have opted to make a worse feeling game. Like, why would you do that? Like, the combat in this can be fun, but it's a huge step back from what Arkham brought to the table. And if this game was exactly how it is right now with Arkham's combat, I think it would be better received because that was so much more fluid, in my opinion. It wouldn't save the game, but it would give it it would give it an added edge, because now playing it, it feels like the combat from Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which is fine, but it's not Arkham combat, and that's what we're coming from.
It's interesting because I feel like the Arkham combat had its day, and then it was it's in everything. Like, from indie games like Hand of Fate to Sleeping Dogs, and obviously Arkham itself, like, it was just everywhere, to the point where, you know, you can, once those rhythms are in you, you can just get through those games like super easy. And I remember just immediately doing like a 50 hit combo, whatever, in Arkham Knight the second I booted up, because I've played so much Asylum and City to that point.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of, kind of was up for something different. I remember when they were showing off Gotham Knights, it just looked so plain and boring. And that's the thing. It's one of those plain third-person action combat models that is literally from Assassin's Creed. Like, you have your melee, your light attacks and heavy attacks, and then you have your specials to bust out. I do think they can combo together quite nicely, but some abilities are made for groups. Like Nightwing, when you get his knighthood, like, there's a bunch of challenges called knighthood. Once you do that, you get an ability to put down like a healing aura on the floor. And I'm like, well, that doesn't serve me at all as a single player, because I'm going to bounce over a guy's head and move away from this aura. So it's like, that was the same thing in The Division. It was like, oh, you can play it single player, but a lot of the things you're unlocking are healing things for allies. And it's like, well, I can't, what's the point? Like, you know, but overall, I think that there's like a feeling of Moorishness to the combat in Gotham Knights that so far I've really enjoyed, where everything is really well choreographed. And this is a weird thing to point out, but all the sound effects line up, which is a thing that I always hated about Assassin's Creed. There's really incredible choreographed moves and really like sick looking martial arts, but you would like deck a guy, and then it would go like afterwards, and I was like, that just takes me right out of it. Like, I want it to feel good.
Yeah.
And I feel like those, at least that portion of I'm roundhouse kicking a dude and backflipping and doing whatever, that side of it lands. The moves are choreographed really well when they're not bugging out, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. You know, like, the animations are lovely, especially, you know, I keep talking about Robin, but Robin with his little staff, he is you know, like, dynamic to watch. He is one half of the dynamic duo, of course.
There he is.
Jason Todd, especially, like, hits like a train. Like, this guy's finishing moves in particular are so brutal.
Just like, a massive, like, rest, like, body slams. Like, there's a stealth takedown. There's like, his quiet stealth takedown. He just double choke holds the person and holds him in the air till they pass out.
Yeah. Like, you can push someone into a wall as him just, like, smash their skull off the wall. And it's like, that guy's so dead. And I know you've got guns anyway, so you are killing people.
With non-lethal rounds, if you go in the description, which is hilarious.
Okay, brilliant. We've moved on from that, happy. But, like, that's that guy's skull is not coming back. I'm telling you that, right? Like, you might have broken that guy's leg, but it's going to be ripped off if you, like, even touch it because you've brutalized it that much. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's fun to watch. It's just not... It doesn't necessarily feel good.
No, I know what you mean. I think that they've tried to aim. That's the thing. That's the kind of side of it that I think is fascinating. It's like, you're coming off Arkham. I remember the initial announcement for this being like, Batman's dead, what happens next? And everyone was like, okay, this is set after Arkham Knight. And then it was like, over time, it felt like they really struggled to combat that and say, no, this is our own separate thing. It just happens to have the same story set up as where we left off in Arkham Knight. And then it was just like, well, we're kind of trading on that. We're kind of trading on Assassin's Creed open world design. We're kind of trading on loot systems and, like, assumedly four-player co-op, which actually is two-player co-op, and we're kind of just trading on the idea of it being like a worthwhile single-player thing and the only Batman thing we've had in 7 years. Yep. So it's like there's all these different elements that are all just mashing into each other, and there's something about the resultant, like, I do think it has a soul. I mean, I guess that maybe it vaporizes by the end of it, but it felt like a team of creatives trying.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like it was completely hampered by studio decisions. It felt like they had to accommodate them, but it felt like they still had a story to tell and they still had a world that they wanted to depict and everything else. I'm looking forward to how much I'm going to eat these words when I play more of the game. But I feel like they at least put their best foot forward. I guess they've, like, stumbled as they tried to move. But yeah,
that's it. You know, I mean, ultimately, while I am more negative on it than I expected to be after the first few hours, I still do stand by what I said, and maybe you said as well, in the early impressions video, that it is still miles better than the Avengers. It's still miles better than Anthem, and that is partly because it does feel like it has a soul. It feels like the foundation is there, and I would be interested to see what they do with the Gotham Knights too, because, you know, I do think that this has potential. It could become a really interesting franchise if you tighten up the areas that so desperately need tightening up in this first effort. So there's something there at the core of it. I wouldn't personally be interested in any expansions for this game necessarily, unless it was something that completely blew me out the water. However, I will be back come Gotham Knights 2 to see how they've improved it, and hopefully they can create the game that I wanted this to be without any of the cut corners, without any of the concessions that had to be made. And maybe it'll finally play like a next-gen game as well.
Well, okay, what do you think they do with this? Because it's sold abysmally. Like, I mean, even the video, like, I always think when we put like a tips and tricks video out, if that thing bombs, it's usually indicative of how many people are buying it day one.
Yeah.
Our tips and tricks video for Gotham Knights, which I do recommend, I've made the damn thing, go watch it, please. But that's absolutely bombed as well. And I think the general reception around this was, it's broken, the frame rate's terrible, at least wait for a patch. I don't see this getting a sequel. I feel like this is like the best they could squander from all those other failed projects. Because one of the ideas for the Damian Wayne game was the Batcycle, which is now in here. Not that well either, but it feels like something that was lifted from another game and plunked in here. I feel like this was sort of, they had to do something and make it right and get something out the door and tell the story and whatever. But I feel like they might just be glad to be done with it, because I imagine the development was an absolute living hell.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, I wonder, you know, do they do a 60 FPS patch? Does that then invert all their weird marketing stuff? Like, they have to kind of go back on, like, the idea that you, what have you just bought? Like, we've sold you an early access game because even the base frame rate isn't ready yet. Do they do a Game of the Year edition? Like, do Warner Brothers stick with this? I know the developer is WB Montreal, but I mean Warner Brothers, the publisher. Do they allow them to stick with this?
I hope so. I don't think you can afford to, you know, try something else. How long did it take to get this game made? Do we want another 7+ year gap between this game and whatever the next Batman-related thing is? I do think the foundations are solid, like I said, and if the developers are passionate about the sequel, I would like to see what they have to offer, because without spoiling anything, this game also ends on a big sequel tease. So it's clear that the developers are at least planning for more adventures in this franchise. Whether that be an expansion, it could be an expansion, it could be a full sequel. Mm-hmm. I don't know yet. The end leaves it open to either, essentially. But yeah, it does seem like this was built as the start of something. Mm. And I would be interested to see what comes next. And I just hope that, you know, it's not hampered by the potential. Again, this is me hypothesizing mandates that have come down from WB.
I think I'm just, it's like I said, I think it's fascinating. The place that it's in right now, it obviously launched horribly, had a really weird rollout where people really weren't looking forward to it. And like I said, I wouldn't have picked it up if not for the, thankfully being able to access it through a review code. So I think I'm curious how much that is replicated across like the mainstream. If people are waiting to see it get polished, if they're interested at all, or if the idea of a Bat Family focused game just isn't what people want. It's like, give me Batman or give me nothing.
Yeah.
And whether that'll sort of meet out over time. I kind of hope they plug stuff into it. If they patch up the frame rate and patch up the raw performance side, you can stick with 30 if you want, but it has to be bang on 30.
Yeah,
the fact that it dips below 20 or whatever, or kicks you back to the dashboard, like that's the stuff that you need to completely, that's unforgivable, that's unacceptable.
100%, that absolutely needs to be sorted out. Yeah. Like you said, you know, yeah, get that thing stable, get it better optimized, get it looking and playing like it should on these next gen machines. I will say that what I would love to see patched in, that I don't think they would do, because it kind of goes against what they have been saying in interviews and in the marketing so far, I would love to see them patch in the ability to play as two people in solo modes. I would love to be able to take two heroes on a mission and swap between them myself. I think that would make those fights more manageable. I think it would make the fights maybe more interesting. I just, as a solo player, I would have liked to have seen that, and it would fit better with the story as well, because there are some times, again, not to spoil anything, where people are, like you said, you know, they're referring to actions that multiple characters accomplished when in reality it was just you. And it's
I had that right near the beginning where I was playing as Jason Todd and I escaped something as like a cave was collapsing, and then I switched to Barbara, and the follow-up conversation was like, oh, you barely made it out of there, Barbara, and I was like, but I wasn't even there. Like, I'm assuming you think that it's like the game's canon. It's like, it reminds me of Octopath Traveler, where in Octopath Traveler, it was assumed that all eight characters are doing everything at all times, even though you're only watching one of them. And I was like, okay, the assumption is that all four of us are doing this, which hilariously, Scratch the Bingo card gives me a segue.
Go on.
An immaculate segue into Mario and Rabbids.
Hey!
Because in Mario and Rabbids, which I'm going to close the podcast on, because I don't know how many people are bothered about Mario and Rabbids. Mario and Rabbids Massive, you give me a shout, and we'll talk more about it in the future. I'll subject Josh to more Mario thoughts and Rabbids thoughts. But that game has the same thing, where in cutscenes, it'll show the entire party, but you're only picking like two of them to do a fight or whatever. But then next time you get to a story moment, everyone is there. It's like Mario, Luigi, and all the different rabbits and everything. Do you know what they've done in this game, Josh?
Go on.
And I quite like the rabbits. I quite like the minions as well. No, I'm not going to go out my way for them, but I don't mind them. I think they're quite funny. They're quite cute, especially the rabbits. I love the Mario and Rabbids, the original game. I'm blanking on its name now, Kingdom of something. That game I absolutely love, and I love the way they did rabbit versions of iconic characters.
Yeah,
absolutely love Rabbit Peach, the idea of just a rabbit dressing up as Peach, trying to be like Peach but doesn't speak. It's all in the animations. Like, yes, they do stupid noises, but trying to put a wig on, trying to look glamorous, trying to take selfies in the middle of battle. Like, that's really funny, that's really cute, and that's a really good idea. And then fleshing that out to like, what would a Rabbit Mario look like? And Rabbit Mario has a toothpick, and he's like a Southern American giant shotgun. He's a get off my lawn type guy,
right,
trying to live up to being like a badass. And I'm like, that's such a great design for that character. And like, you know, Rabbit Luigi's just terrified all the time, because of course he is.
Yeah.
And things like that. And in this one, they've made them talk, which I don't need. They don't talk constantly, but they talk more than the Mario crew. And I don't need Rabbit Peach killing someone and then going, winning. Like, no. That's the wrong direction. I don't need that whatsoever. It's not charming. I tell you what I've started despising.
Go on.
It's everywhere. People saying, I got this.
I got this.
I got this. Okay, oh, you got this. I got this. Have you got it? Have you got it, right? Because everyone's got it now. Can we move on? I just, once you notice that I got this is everywhere, as well as that was awesome. They're everywhere, and it's killing my soul. And like, I got this is just everywhere. And yeah, things like that. that I can't go into specifics, but like right. that phrase,
it's just like
killing me.
Saying stuff for saying yeah. stuff's sake, which I know is hilarious considering we've done like 35 minutes on a Monday morning about Gotham Knights. But you know what I mean? It's like,
I do.
Do you need to plug that silence with a little quip that we've heard a million times? Yeah. What does this add to the character? I don't know. That kind of sounds like to me.
Go on.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
Like when they added voices to the Lego characters after so long of them being like mute and just, you know, emoting with their animations.
At least that would though, like, because I love the Lego Lord of the Rings, like at least that was movie audio and you had like a de facto juxtaposition with really epic gallant dialogue from Lord of the Rings really like, delivered really meticulously and oh my god we need to take care of this thing with Lego characters, like that was funny and it worked. Like I said, I just don't need rapid speech saying winning or whatever it is. It just takes me out of it. But yeah, if I talk about the gameplay, which is what matters, Mario & Rabbids is fascinating. It's a turn-based strategy, but they've tried to hybridize like Mario gameplay into an XCOM or turn-based grids, you know, grid-based strategy game, which is to say that when it's your turn, you just run around as if it's a Mario game. Like it's you get your turn, you have a radius that you can move in, and rather than move on a grid or, you know, like a sign, like, oh, I want to go and attack that guy, I want to kick that guy, then I want to do this next move, you just run around and then you can trigger like a stance to go into aiming or whatever.
Yeah.
Or you can just like kick off a guy and then go into a glide and move somewhere else and then land and run around again. And it's like this beautiful, weird, but it works hybrid of like 3D platforming and strategy that I know they've showed a little bit in the trailers, but I think starts to speed up fights in a really cool way where you're just, like I said, you're hybridizing like platforming mentalities and strategy mentalities, and you're still taking cover. Like when you aim, if you're next to a wall, it'll highlight and show where you're going to go into cover, and your character will automatically take cover and then aim. And it's like once you get those movements down, you're just tearing through areas. And also like the overworld in the original one was a lot more like not necessarily straight linear. There were a lot of paths in it. There were some diverging paths, but it was very much straightforward. It's like, go down this path, get some coins, maybe do a puzzle, and then that's your next battle. In this one, every planet is its own like mini biome, and there are enemies roaming around with levels above their heads. And
okay.
When you walk into them, it triggers a fight, and then you do like a turn-based fight, but you're otherwise doing 3D platforming. There isn't a jump button, but there's contextual stuff, and there's puzzles to solve and characters to talk to and loads of NPCs to talk to and like, you know, merchants and everything. And it's like, these are such really cool evolutions of like, you know, how to, like a strategy game for one, like a grid-based strategy. And then also, like, what is the Mario DNA? What ideas does that give you? And it's like you're collecting, you know, 7 red coins because that's a Mario staple or whatever it is. And I feel like twinning that with the overall gorgeous presentation, like it's easily one of the best-looking games on Switch.
Right.
And the Snowdrop engine is just, well, it's like Ubisoft's shining star that they just don't want to admit is like the best thing they put out. Like this is easily one of the best Ubisoft games. I mean, that company's in the pits right now. But this has love and a purpose and a soul. And I love all the characters designs. Rabbit Rosalina, genius, doing rabbit versions of like the Lumas.
Yeah.
Like I know you don't like you don't speak Mario, but you know those little yellow boys that hang around with Rosalina.
Oh, yeah.
They're like just little sort of fat sack men, because they're half rabbit or whatever. Just all that stuff. If you're into that art direction, that whole idea of rabbitizing Mario. They know exactly what they're doing, minus the talking. Get them to shut up.
It seems like they got the big things right.
Yes.
You know, it feels like a good and worthy successor to an original that I know so many people really, really loved. Mm-hmm. Scott Ilford, what I will ask of you is that I know you haven't finished it yet, but is it on the level of a Game of the Year contender? Are we talking, you know, top 10 of the year, top 5 of the year? Because going into it, I wondered whether it would be a kind of late in the day addition to your top 10, because I know that you really enjoyed the first one. So
Mario
much.
Has twin pistols and can aim at two targets separately.
So yes.
Which is a DMC2 mechanic. and I miss that in more games. Why can I not aim at more two twin things? For the three people that played Twin Caliber on the PlayStation 2, I see you, I feel you, and I wish it was in more games. I don't know, I've only played a couple hours. I'm playing this, I'm absolutely thundering through God of War.
Thundering.
Ironically, hey, I'm icing through God of War, and I'm absolutely loving it. So I've only played this on the train to work and back, which has added up to, I don't know, maybe an hour if I'm lucky. I've only really done the first biome and the first couple of bosses, so it's not that much. We'll see. I think that it's tough contenders this year. Like, you've already got Horizon and Elden Ring and Olly Olly World, goddammit. and so we'll see. But yeah, everything they're going for, they're absolutely nailing. I've seen in the options there's an option to turn down character dialogue.
There you go.
And I'm like, I don't want Mario to not go woohoo, but I do want rabid to shut the F up. So I'm going to maybe faff with that slider and maybe then it'll be game of the year. So we'll see. If I can restore Rabid Peach to her former glory,
yes,
then we'll see. But for now, this has been The Wind-Up. Massive thank you to everybody for listening. Usually I say some stuff. Again, scratch the bingo card. I've been Scott Tilford. You've been Josh Brown.
It's always a pleasure, Scott Tilford. It always is.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you. And we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.